Hello and welcome to Stockwatch. I'm Zinathi Guma, and joining me to wrap this week up are Chantal Marks from FNB Wealth and Investments and Zuela Kemguni from Benguela Global Fund Managers. Thank you so much to the both of you for joining us. Let's start off with what roiled the markets this week, and it was the UK's fiscal plan, or the aftermath of it, and also the Bank of England coming in to kind of try and save the day. Starting with you, Chantal, I just want to know from you the intervention that the Bank of England has undertaken to kind of calm the bond market. Is that enough to soothe investor fears right now?
So I think the biggest thing is that the BOE is between a rock and a hard place, right? So they're actually trying to tighten financial conditions. They're trying to raise interest rates to rein in inflation. And now they're being forced to step in and do something that's more in line with a looser monetary policy approach. Yeah. So they actually have to buy bonds, which is akin to quantitative easing, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to be difficult to... Time, I think, will tell whether or not they'll be able to get that balance right. But I think that to achieve that balance is going to be exceptionally difficult. And that's added to, I think, market uncertainty and happiness with the scenario in its entirety.
And that's the thing, Zuleika, because there are many contradicting things happening right now. You do have the Bank of England trying to tighten, as Chantal said, but then you also have now fiscal policy going in, kind of trying to stimulate growth. And now you have the Bank of England buying bonds, which is basically now in the direction of loose monetary policy. So I'm interested now in terms of their interest rate path. What choice do they have there now?
Yeah, I think they're facing a big challenge. I mean, I think the bottom line is their fiscus, or at least their central bank, cannot constantly print money to support the government. And there has to be some third parties who are buying those bonds. But I think one of the problems is that they actually give enough incentive for people to feel comfortable about the risk-return trade-off. So in essence, the tax cuts that they put forward mean that they will have less tax income, and there's going to be a wider current account deficit. Mm. And because of that, the fiscal deficit, I think because of that, they will actually end up with having to issue more bonds. And I think what we've seen with their bonds blowing out, it's essentially telling people that the investors don't have confidence that they'll be able to do that successfully. So that there isn't much that they can do. They will have to hike rates while they're supporting the government on the other side. So to be the buyer of last resort for government bonds.
Yeah. Chantal, let's actually go back to actually how this started with the announcement of those unfunded tax cuts. You had the IMF coming out this week and saying that it's not really supportive of the move. Where are you on that fence?
Yeah, I think tax cuts are all good and well when you want to stimulate economic growth and when you want to give some relief to consumers who I believe are increasingly under pressure, particularly in the UK when it comes to energy costs. But you have to be able to fund those tax costs. These are unfunded tax costs. They don't have any idea where they're going to get the money from. And what that translates to is they're going to have to probably borrow that money. And I think it was just kind of a poorly thought through plan. I think that they were trying to be popular by taking that approach. Yeah. And I mean, this is, it's conservative politics 101, right? Yeah. Cut taxes, keep businesses and the wealthy happy, and worry about the rest a little bit later on. But the reality is that even in conservative politics, you don't want to run a big budget deficit. And this is exactly what they're doing. So they're not even keeping to their own playbook. It's bizarre, really.
Yeah. All right. With that, let me go to a question here. Would this be a good time to buy UK exposed stocks that seem quite cheap, or should people wait until the smoke clears? Zuleika.
Yeah, I'd be a bit cautious. I mean, there may be companies that have more annuity income streams in the UK, but certainly I'd be a lot more cautious about piling into the UK. I think the situation is not only at the fiscal level or at the monetary level. if you look on the ground in the economy, I mean, their breakup with the EU has left that economy quite vulnerable. And even at individual level, household level, the level of debt has gone up. So at some point, somebody has to stop borrowing and basically stabilize their debt level. So there could be a pressure on the economy going forward. So I'll be cautious about going in. I look for maybe businesses that are in software, those type of businesses where there is an annuity stream, but I'll be cautious about discretionary consumer businesses.
Chantal, what about the stocks that are exposed to the UK in terms of the financial sector? So your Investec, 91, and those kinds of stocks.
So I think that it you have to look at the relative exposure, and you have to look at where those valuations were to start with. So I think a stock like Investec and 91 to a certain extent, they do have big exposure to the UK, but they also have massive exposure to the South African market. And both companies were trading at very, very low multiples to start with. Mm. So perhaps this further beating down could be an opportunity to start getting involved. I mean, banks generally are exposed to a consumer under pressure, but they should benefit from higher household borrowing because it would probably be kind of forced, yeah, and from higher interest rates. And the likes of the 91, obviously, when you have major market volatility and a bear market like the one that we've seen just now, this stock would have come under a lot of pressure. But these conditions don't last forever. So as soon as the market starts figuring out where the bottom is and market participants decide that, okay, enough is enough, and I do think that we are pretty close to getting there, you should start seeing asset managers do well again. Yeah. So I think you kind of highlighted the stocks where I would actually seek out exposure. But I mean, as Zwelakhe said, I wouldn't be comfortable with massive consumer discretionary exposure right now because I think things are going to get really tight in the UK before they get better.
Yeah. There's a question here. On a five-year view, should I commit my remaining cash to the market? I mean, it really seems like there's nowhere to hide. Investors all over are really taking pain. So, I mean, what considerations here, Zwelakhe, should an investor take as they look for value in the market?
Yeah, I think on a five-year view, I mean, if I remember correctly, on any rolling five-year basis, the market is tended to be higher than the previous 5 years. So 5 year is a good time, and I think one would have to just be cautious and be calm. I think there's two things you need to find: defensive businesses. You also have to be calm yourself because there's going to be a lot of volatility in the market in the next probably 12 months. I mean, we don't know what's happening in Europe in terms of gas and the war in Ukraine. And potentially a sizable recession the US and China. Those things would have short-term impact, but I think that might not be a bad time to actually start plowing some cash and actually ensure that in 5 years' time you're going to come out in a good position. Stocks have pulled back, but there are some areas that haven't pulled back enough to actually make a big bet. I'll diversify, find defensive companies, and come.
Mm. You were talking just now, Chantal, about maybe applying caution to stocks that are exposed to consumer discretionary spending. And there's actually a question here. Would City Lodge and Sun City be good bets?
Oh, yeah. There's consumer discretionary and then there's travel, right? So, I mean, I think that where we are currently, travel really is in vogue. I mean, these share prices have come back a little bit, but they've recovered quite well off of the lows of COVID-19. But I don't think that they're pricing in a full recovery in the travel market. Now, from a South African perspective, we are also not fully there when it comes to international arrivals, although local domestic travel has picked up quite nicely. And that has benefited the likes of City Lodge. I think their occupancies are back to pre-COVID-19 levels. Sun International is said to benefit a lot more from international travel. I think we're at about 60% of where we were prior to COVID-19, and there's still a lot of scope for that growth to come through. And I mean, while it may feel like the tourists aren't coming back, perhaps it's just a delayed kind of response from a South African perspective, because if you look at where tourism really started picking up globally, it was during the summer months in Europe, which was our winter, not really a popular time to visit South Africa. So I think December, Jan, Feb, March is going to be a really interesting one to keep an eye out for. And I think that there's certainly scope for occupancies to improve, for gaming revenue to improve, and for everything else to look quite sunny for the likes of Sun International, that's also now got a much better balance sheet and no longer have that tricky exposure that they used to have to Latin America.
Zolake, how much sun do you think will shine on Sun City and City Lodge?
Yeah, I agree with Chantal. I think City Lodge will probably continue to benefit because it's more skewed towards the local travel. And as she says, the international side, I'm a bit more cautious about that. I think if we are going to a difficult environment economically around the world, I think it would make it hard for people to travel. They'll be a bit more cautious. But having said that, I think with the rent depreciating, that might actually create an attractive travel destination out of South Africa for foreign travelers. So we might see it starting to trickle in maybe early next year. But I certainly think if I had to choose between the two, I'd probably go for City Lodge. The numbers that they reported, I think the second half was stronger. And I think that if they just keep the momentum, they should be able to trade at about 10 times earnings in the next 6 months.
Before we go to break, I actually just want to ask you, Chantal, about Porsche. I mean, you have this company coming into a turbulent market. We haven't really seen many IPOs during this time, and some had been wondering if this is even a good idea to implement an IPO at this time. What was your sentiment on that IPO?
Oh, wow. So, I mean, this thing is so complicated, right? Because you have Porsche SE, which owns a big stake in VW, which owns Porsche AG, which is now listed Porsche AG and also sold back some of those shares to Porsche SC. Okay. I hope you're still following me. But basically what happened there is that both Porsche SC, which is the parent company or the majority or has a big stake in VW and VW, are trading at extremely low multiples. These stocks are very, very undervalued by the market, be it because of Dieselgate or whatever the story is, Tesla, the love for Tesla kind of clouding over everything else. But these stocks have been severely depressed in terms of their valuation. And I think the thinking was that the listing of Porsche AG might be a value unlock for shareholders. And I think that it's actually a really good move to make. When you have a company that is a sum of its parts, mm-hmm. and it is valued at much lower than that sum of its parts, listing or unbundling or finding a proper market value for it is a good way for the market to know exactly what that specific stake is worth. Mm. So, I mean, I think it was a pretty solid thing to do. The IPO priced very well, and I'm excited to see what next for Porsche SC and for VW in particular, which is a stock I love.
So we were talking about turbulent markets, and there's actually a very long question on the recession and market reaction. So I've broken it up into two, and I hope that's actually helpful. Zolak, I want to start with you. Based on historical data of previous recessions and the market's reaction, what is the expected duration of this recession?
If I knew the answer, I'd be sitting at home. but on a serious note, I think it depends on a number of factors. So the response of the central banks would play a big role. The response of the government would also play a role, so the fiscal and monetary responses. And to make an example, I mean, you look at the COVID-19 situation, it was very short because there was a massive response worldwide. I don't think we'll have the same kind of response, but you probably could look at maybe 6 months that numbers look bad and might be a period of maximum pessimism in the market, might be a great time to allocate capital into stocks. So I don't think there is a guaranteed duration, but you're probably looking at between 6 and 12 months in terms of the economy. But the market will always price ahead of the actual announcement of a recession and will price out ahead again before the actual recession ends.
All right. So the second part of the question, has the market's reaction already happened or will it continue throughout the recession period? And when will the market start to recover? At the end of the recession or halfway through the recession? Or 75% through the recession? I'm not sure if you got all of that, Chantal.
Yeah, I think Zalaki actually answered the question. Yeah. So the market tends to price these things in way in advance, and then they tend to price out of it way in advance as well. So you might even see the market already pricing in the recession right now, or being super close to reaching a bottom in the anticipation of a recession taking place, if it's even going to take place, because that's still up for debate as well. Mm. And then in terms of pricing out of the recession, as soon as you start seeing a central bank response, or as soon as there are murmurings of a central bank response, you should start seeing the market move up again. It almost always happens earlier than the actual economic, than the actual economic change or the actual economic data releases.
Just sticking with you, Chantal, you talk about the markets already seeming like it is pricing in a recession, but do you think that the markets have priced in fully the impact of what the recession will have on company earnings?
So, I mean, analysts have become quite bearish and quite quickly. So you could still see a situation where earnings expectations do come down. Mm. I do think that the extent of which the market is pricing in interest rate hikes and high bond yields is probably, it's probably fair to slightly bearish. Yeah. I think that the earnings downgrades could still come through. But, I mean, companies are quite flexible in how they manage these things as well. You're already seeing, as companies get concerned over top line and top line growth, they're starting to think about margins. So a lot of companies have already announced that they are reducing headcount, that they are focusing on cost efficiencies and cost containment. And in that way, you do protect your bottom line. So, I mean, these downgrades will come through, but I mean, I don't foresee a total collapse in company earnings this time around.
Yeah, indeed. We actually saw that with the Bed Bath & Beyond. They came out with quarter two results with their loss widening and also reporting a 28% slump in its sales, but also saying that those results came in before their strategic review of reducing the headcount and doing all the things that needs to do to protect its margins. There's actually still another part to this question, Zuleika. So should I buy shares now or wait for the actual recession to start, as the formal definition of a recession of two consecutive quarters of declining GDP? But that's also complicated because you also get in the US where you've had two consecutive quarters of contraction, but it's also not really called a recession. So should one start buying shares now, wait for the recession to start?
I'd start inching in. The shares are down quite a lot. I think we've taken off the 2021 height, sort of bottom of 2021. But I think I'll probably start looking at allocating some capital to extremely undervalued stocks. So where it's been beaten down so much that a very little turnaround in performance, operational performance, would make a big difference. But I equally say that it is difficult to time this thing. So you have to expect that there will be turbulence. I mean, stocks that you could buy now, they could continue becoming cheaper. So I would certainly start nibbling into stocks. And as the bad news are released, I'll try and accelerate that pace of buying.
You see that things are changing by what Apple announced this week, saying that because of faltering demand, they won't be boosting their iPhone production. You also had Bank of America coming in after that and downgrading the stock from a buy to neutral. I mean, Chantal, this is a stock that is seen as being defensive. in that tech complex. I'm wondering how, if anything, has changed for you looking at Apple.
No, I still really like the stock. I still really like the long-term story. I do think that there are specific reasons why you are seeing demand faltering. And one of the biggest reasons, I think, is that you still have a lot of uncertainty coming through from China. And you have lockdowns and all the rest that you're still competing with. And then when consumers are a little bit nervous, they'll put off big ticket items, right? So, or purchasing big ticket items and a phone, let's face it, it's a big ticket item. Mm-hmm. It's not something you do every single day.
Yeah.
So I think that they've probably responded well. Rather do that than have excess inventory that you can't get rid of, especially if you're releasing a new phone every 2 years. You'd rather want to get a lot of excitement going on the new releases and maybe make up for whatever you are losing out on right now. Then.
Yeah. Zuleka, do you think it maybe could be an overreaction that the Bank of America has downgraded the stock?
So I think the numbers that are going to come are probably going to be disappointing to some extent, certainly if you compare to beginning of year expectations. However, I do think it's a good business, it's a good quality company. I think in the long term, you should be fine with this stock. In the short term, you might have some turbulence and numbers that are coming out below expectations, and that might create a buying opportunity. So I certainly think it's a good business. I have no doubt about it.
Mm. All right. There's a question here on AECI. Can the panel comment on the long-term prospects for the stock? Chantal?
Yeah, so I mean, this is a stock that I actually had a very quick look at the share price graph. And I mean, over the last 5 years, there are a few special dividends in between. The stock's down 30. No, that is actually Sun International. The stock's down 17-18% over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And that is while we have been going through a mining boom. Now, the interesting thing about mining support services where this stock plays, I mean, they're in a few, they're quite diversified, but one of their biggest businesses is mining support, is that it does come a little while after the mining boom. So we've had this upswing in commodity prices. It's come off a little bit. There is concern that we don't have enough supply of commodities or new supply coming online from new expansions over the next few years, which is where these guys are probably going to start getting involved. So, I mean, it's a late cycle play, and I do think that we are there, or at least approaching it. And I think that they could benefit from something like this. The stock has been completely beaten down. They pay a massive dividend as well. So, I mean, I really like it for the long term. I would be very comfortable being invested in AACI.
Mm. Let's go into paper and packaging, Sappy. So that stock has actually had quite a good run this week. At some point, it was up 8%. And yesterday they said that they're selling three of their mills as they reduce their exposure to the graphic paper segment. The stock is down a little bit today, though. But that sale, Zuleka, how big is it for Sappi, considering that a lot of investors have been concerned about debt in the past and saying that the money from this transaction will also be used to be paying some of the debt?
And the question, first of all, is whether this was optional or a forced sale upon them, I mean, to try and address the debt situation. I think if you look at the history of Sappi, they've always been in the earlier years, they were buying mills to try and close them and take capacity out. And that actually led to accumulation of debt. And they are now at a point where they need to actually run the business. And I think the reason why the stock rallied was that perhaps it's a signal that the company is starting to take a different approach where they are selling the mills to basically, as I say, potentially force upon them to pay off the debt. But potentially it's a good signal that management is starting to focus on less graphic paper, less paper market, and focus more on packaging and the cellulose market to try and build that business in that area. So I don't think for me it's a stock that I really like, but I mean this could potentially be a turning point in their strategy.
Chantal, I'm actually interested in Capitec. They came out with their results yesterday And the market really, really disappointed. this has become a trend. And I'm wondering right now, because the market has been complaining that it's expensive, would this be the time to sell? If you're already in it, do you sell or do you hold?
Yeah, there's a term called price for perfection, and Capitec priced for perfection five times over because it's five times more expensive than its closest rival. It's expensive. It's pricing in massive growth. It's pricing in 20%+ growth into perpetuity, and that's in the bottom line, right? But it is becoming more like a traditional bank. They're still adding customers quite quickly. They do have new lines of business that's doing quite well. But off of this massive base, it's going to be very tough for them to grow at the multiples that the market is implying that they will grow at. So, I mean, even after this dip, I'd probably lighten a little bit. It could still come under pressure. That said, it is Capitec, right? Yeah. It always makes a bit of a comeback. So,
exactly.
I'd probably, if it goes down another few hundred rand, I'd probably start thinking about getting involved, actually.
Okay, all right. Zolake, don't have time for your comment on Capitec. Time flies when you're having fun. So let's get to your stock pick for today.
I'll go with Microsoft. I think my preference is for a company that is fairly stable, very well run, and has a lot of annuity income. I think the stock has pulled back quite significantly relative to the Nasdaq, for example. It's only down about 15%. I think relative to 25% for the Nasdaq. I think the stock is in great shape. Their portfolio is well balanced between the consumer, the cloud, and the business softwares. Mm-hmm. So I think it's over 20 something times. I think it's not screaming by, but I think technically it would be a good place to hide during this turbulence in the market.
All right. Your place to hide, Chantal?
Yeah, also a place to hide. My pick today is Remgro. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you have a company that is trading at a 40% discount to its net asset value, but they're not just sitting there with investments and doing absolutely nothing about it. They're actually sweating their assets quite hard at the moment. And I'm really enjoying the new vigor from that management team. CIVH, which is their fiber business, is on the verge of a big deal with Vodacom. That business has actually just turned profitable after recording massive losses previously. They've unbundled RMH to shareholders. They're left with FirstRand that should benefit from higher interest rates. The Mediclinic deal is going to go through. Healthcare fundamentals look really great at the moment. They've got RMI in there that's going to benefit from a hardening insurance market. So a lot in there that you can really get excited about. At a pretty decent price tag.
All right, well, thank you to the both of you for joining us today. And that's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guest, Chantal Marx from FNB Wealth and Investments, and Zolake Mguni from Benguela Global Fund Managers. From me and the rest of the team, have a great weekend.